Well, throughout the season of Lent, we have been talking about the different kind of Goliaths that are in our lives. The Goliath being that big giant that brings fear and trepidation into our lives. And today, I want to talk with you and talk to me as well about the Goliath of information fatigue, information overload. And this is a topic that we're all dealing with. No matter who we are and how old we are, no matter what we think about different things that are going on in the world, we're all dealing with this Goliath in our lives. So I remember as a kid growing up, there were a couple different ways to get information. The one that sticks out in my head a lot growing up was my dad would come home every evening and he would sit in his lazy boy chair and he would turn on the network news. And at that time, there were three channels for news. And he would watch the news, and then he would go sit down at the dinner table and wait for dinner to be served. I imagine if I did that today. Actually, I cook 99% of the meals, so that wouldn't really work that well. But that was one way you got information. Then the other way you got information was, you remember the newspaper boy riding their bike or they're driving their car through neighborhoods throwing the newspaper? They had to get up really, really early. I did that for maybe a week when I was a kid, and I was done. And you had to get the papers out early because people, when they were waking up and having breakfast, wanted to read either the local news or national news. Maybe they would get information from the radio. That was kind of starting to phase out a little bit when I was a kid. Or there are these moments when you would gather at a diner with people from all over the spectrum, and you would have lots of conversation about things. But it was civil. Remember that word, civil? It was civil conversation. And people could disagree with one another and still give each other a handshake. And someone would always say, hey, I'll buy your coffee and your donut. Well, back in my day, in my little town, did I just say back in my day? What is going on? When I was a kid, it wasn't a donut, it was a kolache. And oh man, do I miss those kolaches. Well, the 80s hit. The 80s hit and we started having a different kind of information kind of coming at us. Around the clock news. The information age that started around the 50s or so went into full swing. And it's been a Goliath ever since. And why do I say that this information age that we're in right now at this moment in time in history is a Goliath? Because it acts like a Goliath. And we give to it what Goliath wants. The Goliath, the big warrior, the one that's yelling at us, the one that was yelling at the Israelites, created all of this fear in the Israelites' spirit. The same thing is happening with all this information that's coming at us. And it's coming at us so fast that many of us are ill-equipped to deal with it. And it creates a massive amount of fear, just like the Goliath did to the Israelites. And one of the things that I know is that we can become addicted to fear. There's lots of things that we can become addicted to, but fear is one of them. We can become addicted to fear, and then we seek that fear. We seek that reinforcement of fear. And so we dig deeper and deeper, and all of a sudden we're in rabbit holes of fear. And the conversations that I have as a pastor with people, they are struggling with trying to figure out how to get out of these rabbit holes. They're stuck in fear. The Goliath is too big for them. It's a vicious cycle. And we all get stuck in it. We all get stuck in it. But Marlis read a word of hope. Light. Jesus says, come to me, for I will give you rest. Jesus didn't say, come to me and I will give you an endless cycle of information. Come to me, I will give you rest. My yoke is easy. If you're going to bed and the last thing you do is check your phone for the latest information, if you're waking up in the morning and you're checking your phone for the latest information, that yoke can be heavy. When you're taking your lunch break, whenever you get a free moment, are you checking your phone for that information? That's not a light yoke. That is a heavy yoke. And it's jacking everybody up. Everybody. It's become a Goliath. But there are some other words of hope. As you look at this story that we all know as David and Goliath. And we're going to look at this story and we're going to dig into this story because David may not be who we think David is or was. When we started this worship series about a year and a half ago, we talked about trust the story. And we started in Genesis and we're going to go through Revelation. And we've been thinking like, okay, now we're in Samuel and we're going to have to speed forward because we thought we were going to go 3 years. We might have to go a little quicker. But one of the things I talked about is when we read these stories that we've been had since we were little kids, we kind of move into this lullaby effect. We think we really know the story. Oh, David and Goliath, oh, we know the story. It's a young, defenseless boy who goes down and tries to give it his best and kills the giant and everything's fine. And we move on. Or we treat this story as a children's Sunday school story. Or we make it into a children's musical. And it's not. This is an adult story. So look at David first. He is young, but he is far from defenseless. King Saul is looking for someone to take on Goliath. He can't get any volunteers. And here comes the youngest son of Jesse, David, and he says, I'll do it. And Saul looks at him and says, there is no chance you're going to be able to win. I can't put my hopes in you. We need to find somebody else. Goliath has been a warrior far, far too long. He's won every battle. But David gives his resume. David shares with King Saul his resume. David responds, and David says, I have been spending years protecting the sheep from lions and wolves with a weapon that I don't think many of us fully understand. It's a sling. And it's not the kind of sling where you kind of put it on your arm and you rear back and you just rubber bands and you shoot a projectile. That's not that kind of sling. I had that kind of sling. I only had it for probably a couple hours because I was shooting my little brother with it. And he ran across the patio and I hit the sliding glass door and my dad said, we're not doing that anymore. It's a different kind of sling. The other thing that I think is really important is David is telling Saul that he's protected the sheep from wolves and lions. Have you ever been in the presence of a lion when they haven't been behind a cage or in a cage? I have, in a Jeep on safari. The first time I was in Africa, we pull up on this Jeep, in this Jeep, we pull up next to a pride of lions. First thing you notice is the smell. And then you realize there is nothing between you and these lions except the other people that are closer to the lions than you are. And as we pulled up, the people that were closest on this side of the Jeep are crawling over to the other side. It is incredibly intimidating. It's scary. And David says, part of my resume is I face down these lions with my sling. So let's look at the sling, this weapon. In battle at that time, you'd have several different kinds of forces. The first kind of force would be heavy infantry. These are people that are all in armor with a sword and a javelin and a spear, and they would typically make up the center of the line of battle. And they were on their feet and they would march. Then you had cavalry. Cavalry, people on horseback, people that are in chariots, and they were very mobile, usually able to flank the heavy infantry. And then you'd have artillery, which we see as arrows, or in the Israelite army, slingers. Slingers. A couple hundred slingers with stones were devastating to heavy infantry. And David was a slinger. He grew up as a slinger. His family were all slingers. And if you were a good slinger, you could throw a stone and hit targets of up to 200 yards away. You could also bring down birds that were in flight. These were slingers. And a good slinger, if they would get their sling going as fast as they could, when they released the stone, it would fly at least 35 feet per second. And if you were close enough to the target, it would hit the target with the same force as a 45 Magnum pistol. Still think David was a weak little boy? And by the way, the stones that David would have picked up in that valley were twice as dense as the other stones in that area. Still think this is a Sunday school story? So let's look at the great giant Goliath. He's older. He's been carrying heavy armor for years and years. He's been in many battles. That had to take a toll on him. And by the way, the armor and the weapons that he and other people have to carry for him because they're too heavy weighed somewhere between 250 to 300 pounds. That's me on the low end, trying to go even lower. Imagine going into battle with me strapped to your body. Goliath, he moves slowly. He has to have an attendant walk with him to help him come down to the valley and help him carry his equipment. He doesn't see well. He thinks that David is carrying sticks, plural. David's carrying a shepherd's staff. And the giant only notices that David is not a heavy infantry when it's too late. Still think Goliath was this scary monster? Well, if you give Goliath the power, if you give Goliath your fear, you will. There are all kinds of rabbinic scholars that have taken a look at Goliath. How does this one person get to be so big in that generation of men? A lot of rabbinic scholars think that Goliath had the same disease that Andre the Giant had. Gigantism, continuing to grow and grow and grow until you can no longer sustain the growth and you die. Anybody ever see Princess Bride? Yeah? Oh, yeah, we a couple people. If you haven't watched it, I encourage you to watch it. Andre the Giant's in it. Can't move well. Can't see well. Goliath. Maybe not so scary after all. So David slings his stone, and he hits the giant right between the eyes, which David knew he could do. David had all confidence that he could kill this giant, that he was that accurate. And then he goes over to Goliath, pulls Goliath's sword out of Goliath's sheath, and cuts his head off. And then he takes it back to Jerusalem with him, with Goliath's sword, and puts it into his tent as a trophy. Still think this is a Sunday school story? I'm still waiting for the musical to be written for kids with that ending. Look, Dad, Mom, take a picture now. It's an adult story. And when we make it into a Sunday school story, we miss the point of it all. David wasn't this weak little boy. David had everything David needed to defeat Goliath. And there's even more light here. There's this interesting exchange before the battle between Goliath and David. Goliath said to David, "Am I a dog that you are coming to me with sticks?" Because he can't see, he's blurry. He thinks he's carrying more than one stick. Then Goliath cursed David by his gods. Then Goliath said to David, come to me so I can give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the wild animals of the field. Goliath's like, come over here so I can see you. Come over here so you can be in my range. And once we got close battle going on, I'm gonna win. But David replied to Goliath, "You are coming against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I am coming against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel's armies, whom you have defied. This very day, the Lord will deliver you into my hand." Not a sword, not a javelin, not a spear. "The Lord will deliver you. I will strike you down and cut off your head. This day I will give the corpses of the Philistines' army to the birds of the sky and the wild animals of the land. Then all the land will realize that Israel has a God, and all this assembly will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will deliver you into our hands." And see, that's the not-so-secret power of defeating the power of information overload and the fear that it causes. Because it asks us the question, what is our hope built on? Is our hope built on a sword, spear, a javelin? Or let me put it this way, in today's information age, is our hope built on how many posts you make on social media? How many statements you read? How many rabbit holes you go into? Your own ability to argue your point, or your own ability to fill yourselves constantly with fear, seeking that fear addiction? Where we put our hope? Everyone who hears these words, Jesus says, and does them is like a wise man who builds his house on a rock. The rain fell, the flood came, the winds beat against that house, but it did not collapse because it had been founded on rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain fell, the flood came, and the winds beat against that house, and it collapsed. It was utterly destroyed. Are we building our hope on Jesus Christ, the rock? Or are we building our hope on the sand of information that is going to blow away? It's not here forever. The one thing that withstands the test of time for all generations is that Jesus is the rock. Psalm 40 puts it this way: I relied completely on the Lord. I didn't rely on information. I relied completely on the Lord, and he turned toward me and heard my cry for help. He lifted me out of the watery pit, out of the slimy mud. He placed my feet on a rock and gave me secure footing. He gave me a reason to sing a new song, praising our God. May many see what God has done, so that they may swear allegiance to him and trust in the Lord. I don't know where you are right now in your life. Maybe you've got a handle on the information overload. Maybe, like me, you turn it off. Just turn it off. I don't want it to run me. I'm not interested in giving the Goliath of fear any energy or any oxygen. I'm interested in being in real relationships with real people, day after day after day after day. Or maybe you are sucked in to fear over and over and over again, and it's really hard to get out. If you're burdened by the Goliath of information overload, don't forget that you have a sling in your pocket. You're not weak. You're not defenseless. You can take control. You have the power. And the rock that you pick up is more dense than any other rock there can be. Turn not to the endless information that grips you, the fear, but turn to God. Cry to God. Trust that God will lift you out of the watery pit, the slimy mud, and place your feet on the rock of Jesus Christ. Because the promise is that you will sing a new song of praise to God. Let us pray. Lord God, you come to us knowing who we are, knowing that at times we can be filled with anxiety, and we spin and we spin and we spin and we spin. It's been true of the Israelites 3,000 years ago, and it's still true for us in our day. But help us to trust in you. Pull us out of the slimy mud. Place our feet upon the rock. And God, when we find ourselves feeding the Goliath, help us know that we are forgiven, that we are your people, that you name us, you claim us. This world does not name us and claim us. You do. We are not a child of this world. We are a child of you. We've been baptized. We've been saved by grace through faith. We ask that you continue to move in our lives so that we may sing a new song of praise to you. And we all say together, amen.